I'm Manolo Quezon, and this is the Explainer Podcast. Conventions, Conveners, and Impresarios, Part 1, The Rise and Fall of the Political Party Convention. On Wednesday, July 7th, 2021, a performance in one of the palace's function cottages took place. It was aired on state television and showed the president and a cast of several from the PDP Laban Party. PDP Laban Vice Chairman and Secretary of Energy Alfonso Cusi delivered this message to the president.
As we have mentioned earlier, Mr. President, the resolution for you to run for Vice President is not only of PDP, but it also of all other parties, especially when we met in Cebu. So the calling for you to run for President is because of the desire of the people, not only PDP, for the transition of leadership, so that there will be a transition of leadership that will ensure to para po matuloy lang yung programa na sinimulan ninyo sa paglaban sa droga, terorismo, poverty, at katahimikan po. Sagutin ninyo ng in a positive way para sa ganoon matapos na pa rin yung haka-haka pangamba ng iba pong membro.
Now let me pause for a minute and focus on this event. The performance addressed a practical political problem. How do you make it seem a leader has followers? And that their candidacy is driven not by personal ambition, but public demand. What just happened is what in other countries and in our own country a generation or two ago would have taken place in a party convention. But the parties of yesterday aren't the parties of today. The era when parties actually had a big rank and file are long past, as is the era when parties themselves were powerful organizations. The story of how they lost their power also includes the story of how the people who got to choose who ran for the presidency has also changed over time. This is Manolo Quezon, and this is the Manolo Quezon is the Explainer podcast. Welcome. Winston Churchill, who changed parties twice in his long career, once put it this way: when you hear the bugles sounding the charge, any old nag in the stable will do. He was referring to political parties, and that's a basic truth. Candidates need parties, and sometimes, as we'll see, parties need candidates. That's because in our system you need a party because of documentation. A registered political party gets a copy of the election returns. That's the tabulation of votes from precincts, cities, provinces, and nationally. You get to assign poll watchers who are accredited by the political parties. In other words, today, you need the party as a vehicle for your candidate. But parties no longer decide who candidates will be. Since parties don't pick candidates, we no longer need to have political party conventions. But conventions were the earliest way for candidates to be chosen or get ratified. Since our first presidential campaign in 1935, there have been three ways to pick candidates for the presidency. The first is within a party. The other two consider parties as incidental or even a bad thing. Let's start with picking candidates within a party. This is done through a political party convention, which can either be a pre-arranged ceremonial occasion or an all-out, no-holds-barred fight for the support of party delegates to the convention. Our political leaders modeled their party conventions on the ones held in America. They were intimately familiar with American party conventions because every convention would be lobbied by Filipinos to have the independence plank for the Philippines inserted in that party's campaign platform. The second way to pick candidates is to put the decision on who should be a candidate not in the hands of party delegates, but instead in the hands of respected individuals from different backgrounds. This is called a convener's group instead of a convention. The third way is through what Randy David calls political impresarios. An impresario in show business is someone who organizes and often finances concerts, plays, or operas. In politics, it's someone or some people who stage manage the promotion of a candidate. Somehow, we have a lingering collective memory of the days when parties picked candidates. Maybe we actually still think they do, but a more basic fact is parties are really quite detached from us. In one of my columns, I mentioned a paper by the political pollster Ronald Holmes. He said only 10% of Filipinos favor a political party. But it wasn't always that way. Let's go back in time a little.
Happy days are here again, the skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together shout it now, there's no one who can doubt it now. So let's tell the world about it now. Happy days are here again.
You just heard Happy Days Are Here Again. In the 1933 Democratic Convention, the campaign for Franklin D. Roosevelt discovered that his favorite song, Anchors Away, didn't spark joy, so they shifted to this song, which became the anthem not just of FDR, but the Democratic Party all the way up to the early 1990s. I thought the song had died with America's Greatest Generation, but when Biden and Harris won, lo and behold, Barbara Streisand tweeted her version of the song to congratulate them, and once again, this old song has regained its democratic currency. This song points to a moment in time when our own modern presidential politics came into being. I'm looking at four pictures from the pre-war papers. They date from 1934 and 1935, showing two separate events. The first was the convention of the Partido Nacionalista Demócrata under Quezon. The second, a coalition convention between two parties, Quezon's and Osmeña's, which was known as Partido Pro Independencia Demócrata. Both took place in the Rizal Memorial Complex in the baseball and tennis stadiums. In the first two, about half the bleachers are filled. Lots of men, and in this era they were all men, in white linen suits, in the bleachers, and on a platform facing them, with a table decorated with the Filipino and American flags, and those gigantic microphones for broadcasting, typical of the 1930s. In the second set, since two parties are now involved, the whole stadium is filled, and we know from press accounts that there were no less than 40 brass bands. 2 years after Franklin D. Roosevelt won the presidency of America, we thus had our first national presidential election. At first, we frankly copied the style and assumptions of American presidential politics. But we also started evolving our own presidential politics from the very start. The Commonwealth elections of 1935 featured an American-style campaign in that party conventions nominated candidates, who then pretended to be uninterested in running for office, conducting what the Americans called front porch campaigns. The party, not the candidates, were supposed to do the campaigning, you see. But 1933 was the last of the front porch campaigns in America. By 1936, Roosevelt himself was creating the modern campaign. Here at home, it was World War II that ended the front porch campaigns that had been conducted in 1935 and 41. In the first post-war election in 1945, President Sergio Osmeña, who'd been elected and re-elected vice president in 1935 and 1941 by waging a front porch campaign with Manuel L. Quezon, tried the same thing. Manuel Rojas, on the other hand, waged a modern campaign, touring the nation and using radio, while his opponent only delivered one campaign speech. Here, let me pause to underline something important. There is a reason front porch campaigns could work before World War II and fail after the war. And it has something to do with our political culture and what happens when that culture collides with practical necessity. In our political culture, everyone wants to belong and no one likes to be outside the big tent. On the other hand, sooner or later, being part of a big group gets on our nerves, so we strike out on our own in the hope of establishing our own big tent. So we have a schizophrenic approach to politics. We all want to belong, but belonging places you in a pecking order that makes us become rebels. But so long as we're in the big tent, our Filipino group dynamics likes to present an image of unity, which means we like to eliminate opportunities for fighting in public. But this means sooner or later, those who have other ideas have no alternative but to leave. In 1933, the year of FDR's presidential victory, the ruling Nacionalista Party here at home split on the question of independence. The party thus became two under the leadership of Quezon, the Antis, and Osmeña, the Pros, respectively. In 1935, the two parties formed a coalition, and in 1938, reunited as the Nacionalista Party again. Both the 1935 and 1941 campaigns thus featured conventions that eliminated competition. They became exercises in party unity, which means party discipline. The politicians liked this because for the entire pre-war Commonwealth, it basically meant the country was a one-party state. And so long as your leadership knows how to wield the carrot and the stick, it will stay that way for everyone's maximum convenience. But in 1945, things were different. The country was bankrupt, ruined, and divided on the question of collaboration. The government had no carrots and few sticks. Party unity couldn't be maintained because its surviving leaders, Osmeña and Rojas, both wanted to run for the presidency, and they had opposite views on collaboration. The pre-war Nacionalistas thus split into the Nacionalistas and the Liberals. We became a two-party democracy by accident. And that accident was a failure by the ruling party since 1935 to stay united in 1945. And so, also by accident, did conventions start to become competitive exercises. There are still people alive today who remember the pre-martial law years when even sari-sari stores were divided on party lines. One might be frequented by and extend credit to liberals, while another sari-sari store might do the same for nacionalistas. Entire provinces might consider themselves nacionalista country, like Batangas, or liberal country, like Quezon. But this was an accident born of weakness. There were two points in political time when it seemed possible the natural inclination of our professional politicians to prefer one-party government might be restored. In both cases, death got in the way. In 1948, when Manuel Rojas showed every sign of winning re-election in 1949, and in 1957, when Ramon Magsaysay had become so unbeatable, both major political parties were poised to run him as their joint candidate. But again, the accidents of fate got in the way. With strong leaders taken off the chessboard, weaker successors found their parties splitting over and over again. In 1949, President Elpidio Quirino found the Liberals leaking allies such as Carlos P. Romulo and Jose Avelino. In 1957, Carlos P. Garcia found the Nacionalistas leaking allies too, such as Manuel Manahan. In both cases, the incumbents won, carried forward by the momentum of their prematurely demised predecessors. But the parties had proven fragile. It's interesting that the Nacionalistas and Liberals both began to fall apart at around the same time and for similar reasons. In other countries, when a party leader is defeated in an election, that leader steps aside and the party picks a new leader who will try a different approach. In 1946, when Sergio Osmeña lost, he stepped down as party leader of the Nacionalistas. So it was that a new leader, Jose P. Laurel, led the Nacionalistas in seeking the presidency in 1949. But Laurel lost. He didn't step aside, though, because he claimed he was cheated out of victory. He wanted to run in 1953 to have a round two against the man who beat him, Elpidio Quirino of the Liberal Party. But in 1953, a former liberal, Ramon Magsaysay, was obviously the coming man. So Laurel stepped aside and they made Magsaysay the Nacionalista candidate. When he defeated Quirino in 1953, Quirino stepped aside as the leader of the Liberal Party. When the next leader of the Liberal Party, Jose Yulo, was defeated in 1957, he stepped aside and Diosdado Macapagal became leader of the party, winning the presidency in 1961. When he lost his bid for re-election in 1965, he stepped aside as leader of his party. The Nacionalistas, too, had leaders step aside after defeat. Carlos P. Garcia was successfully elected in 1957, but when he was defeated in 1961, he stepped aside. Then the Nacionalistas did again in 1965 what they had done in 1953. They got a former liberal, in this case, Ferdinand Marcos, to be their candidate. Another Laurel, this time Jose B. Laurel Jr., was instrumental in this decision. So it's clear by the mid-1960s, the party era was coming to the end of the road. So long as the pre-war politicians and their followers were the majority, the inertia of the old ways kept things together.
We're going to be deadlocked on the second ballot. It's 3 a.m. on the East Coast. Networks want us to recess, start the third ballot tomorrow evening in prime time. I think they're right. We're not getting anywhere tonight.
But we have a chance to address the delegates tomorrow. Some of us haven't done that yet.
Yes. So, we're agreed then? President is flying out tomorrow, hoping to address the convention on Wednesday when we have our nominee. And please, gentlemen, we need a nominee. So please, somebody, talk to somebody and figure this mess out before the president gets here and is forced to pick sides. One night of this is entertaining. Two nights we look like idiots.
That was from an episode of The West Wing. The Democratic Convention, tasked with picking Jed Bartlett's successor, was deadlocked. The president's legacy was in danger. And even though he was a lame duck, he was considering using what prestige he had left to influence the outcome of his party's convention. That, of course, was a drama in fictional America. Reality in politics is, of course, much messier. The parties themselves were increasingly unable to come up with viable candidates. Let's review. Remember, in 1945, Rojas had left his original party, the Nacionalistas, to establish the Liberal Party. In 1953, Magsaysay left the Liberals and ran as a Nacionalista. By 1961, we would have the last president to win the presidency as the lifelong member of his party, Diosdado Macapagal, a liberal, in 1961. In fact, it would not be until 2010, with the election of another liberal, Benigno S. Aquino III, that we had a president elected who had been a lifelong member of his party. The pattern had been set. By 1965, it was a former liberal, Ferdinand Marcos, running as a Nacionalista, who'd win the presidency. Incidentally, the clincher for him in the Nacionalista Party convention that year was his wife, Imelda. The powerful Lopez clan controlled a big block of delegates. Marcos got the Lopez block after Imelda went up to the hotel room of the Lopez brothers and broke down in tears, asking for their help. In the meantime, the parties that had been increasingly unable to come up with winning presidential candidates from their own ranks began to wither and die too. In 1969, Ferdinand Marcos achieved what had only been achieved back in 1941 by Quezon, re-election. Some have argued that besides massive spending, one way Marcos was able to win a second term was by subverting his former party, the Liberal Party, so that it nominated as its presidential candidate someone Marcos was sure to defeat, Sergio Osmeña Jr. This was because Marcos presented himself as a guerrilla hero while Osmeña had gone into business during the Japanese occupation. Indeed, before martial law, a fixture of the political scene was what came to be known as the Marcos Liberals, so much so that Marcos toppled his party mate, ally, and former patron, Speaker Jose B. Laurel Jr., and replaced him with Cornelio Villarreal, an old-time liberal. Of course, once martial law was imposed, the parties really withered away. First, there weren't competitive elections for years. Second, oppositionists were either in jail, exile, dead, or in the hills. Third, the two major parties ended up replaced by a new dictatorial super party, the Kilusang Bagong Lipunan. Opposition to that was composed of many little groups, movements, and parties. In the KBL, the only choice was how loudly you applauded Ferdinand Marcos. And the KBL would always have Marcos as a candidate, so that the KBL kept up the showbiz of having conventions in 1981 and 1985. In the opposition, the love of freedom was demonstrated by a lack of unity. The parties of yesterday had no place, it seemed, in the democracy of tomorrow. And with that came a disdain for old-fashioned conventions. In 1988, Cory Aquino finally agreed that people power had to give way to political parties. She let her advisors create one. It was called the Laban ng Demokratikong Pilipino, or LDP. In 1992, the time came for the country to elect a president who would succeed Cory. For the old parties, choosing their candidates was easy. They had no chance of winning, so no one cared, and so both the Nacionalistas, with Salvador H. Laurel, and the Liberals, with Jovito Salonga, nominated veterans forgotten by time. But Cory's party was the ruling party, the biggest party, and because of its size, it had more than one potential candidate. Two major candidates emerged. One was a professional politician, and he'd even been Cory's reliable Speaker of the House, Ramon Mitra Jr. The other was a soldier, a non-politician, who said he would abide by the convention's results, Fidel V. Ramos. Ramos lost, so he walked out and found the party, the Christian and Muslim Democrats, or CMD, under Raul S. Manglapos, willing to take him in. And the party became Lakas CMD. And the truth is, this is how it's pretty much worked in our politics over the past 30 years. The bugle sounds the charge, the campaign is afoot, and prospective presidents then shop around for a political party they can ride to victory. But if party conventions are now obsolete, what could take their place? This is what we're going to tackle next time. You've been listening to the Manolo Quezon is the Explainer podcast.